The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Do the Brooklyn Nets have a problem, New York? Do the, by the way, L.A. Everyone's talking about it there. It's a bad matchup for Aaron Rodgers. We're going to get to that in a little later on in the show. Your Los Angeles Rams, but New York. Brooklyn, USA. Is there a Kyrie problem? Let me tell you first what's going on, and then let me tell you my thoughts before this season ever started. The NBA is reviewing videos, I'm sure you've heard by now, circulating on social media of a maskless Kyrie Irving at what appears to be a family birthday party. And according to the reporting of Adrian Wojnarowski and Malika Andrews, there is no belief that the Brooklyn Nets guard will return to the team's lineup this week. Kyrie Irving was already ruled out of his fourth straight game Tuesday night against Denver, and sources say that at a minimum, he is expected to miss Wednesday's game against New York and Saturday's against Orlando. And they're saying it's for personal reasons. In the videos, which have been widely shared Monday night, a smiling Kyrie Irving is dancing with his sister on a confetti-covered floor and clapping as she blows out candles. Nice, it's a birthday party, right? Good for him. He's with his sister. If the video is found to be recent, it could be a breach of the league's coronavirus protocols, however, because, by the way, much like they were that super spreader event at Alabama after the championship win, you can't be in a whole group of people without masks on. People were still in the middle of a pandemic. And the tragedy is that there is a vaccine, and they're rolling it out. But it's going to take a while to get it to everyone. And in the meantime, believe me, the vaccine ain't a cure. If you get COVID, you can die from that. Ooh, I can die from the flu. The COVID rate is much higher. You understand? It's no joke. The reason the NBA completed their season last year is because they went into a bubble, and I think they may be heading in that direction again this year. But look, let me get back to Kyrie Irving. When the season started, my point of view about the Brooklyn Nets was as follows. Number one, the number one concern I had, what version of himself would Kevin Durant be? And I thought optimistically, if he's 80% of himself after that kind of injury, that's nice, but 80% of Kevin Durant's not Kevin Durant. It's more like Paul George. And if you thought of a team with Paul George and Kyrie Irving, all of a sudden you're like, I ain't a championship team. Neither one of those guys is good enough to be the best player on a championship team. They could be second and third best, but who's the best? Because it ain't Dinwiddie, who you don't even have anymore this year. And it ain't Caris LeVert. Not good enough. You need more. Words of Jay-Z, we don't believe you. You need more people. But if Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant, that changes everything. So that was my number one question. What would Kevin Durant be this year? Man, I saw not only preseason, but by game one, I thought, yep, that's Kevin Durant. It may not be 100% Kevin Durant, but he's already at least 80% Kevin Durant. And the truth be told, he looks to me to be just about as effective as he normally is. If he's diminished, we'll find out over time, and maybe he'll be 90% of himself, 95% of himself. He looks like Kevin Durant to me. So that was my number one concern. That's off the board. Or at least for the time being, the early returns on that are very good. Let's put it that way. Number two concern for the Brooklyn Nets, Kyrie Irving. And now with KD being KD, it's the number one concern, Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, guys, who's the most not talented, who is the most skillful basketball player who ever lived? Because if you rounded up a group of five or six guys, Kyrie would be one of them. He has a case. I mean, I'm talking about of guys whose talent was pitched very high, of all the super talented guys. Who was also the most skillful? Let's not confuse talent and skill. Talent is your capacity to do something. Skill is the acquired traits that you've taken on, the acquired knowledge of the game, and how that refines your talent. How you can how this talent and the skill combine to make a great player. Kyrie Irving is not only super talented; he's arguably the most skillful player of all time. He's certainly in the conversation. When you talk about pure skills, Kobe Bryant, Kyrie Irving, how many guys would you point out. Kyrie has, arguably, greatest handles of all time. Kyrie is a deadly outside shooter. Kyrie hits free throws. Kyrie is a great passer. Kyrie is as good a finisher. Well, let's put it this way. Arguably, the best ever finisher in the paint under the rim. Kyrie's skills are ridiculous, especially for a guy that talented. Now, does he always have the wisdom to deploy those skills in the best service of the team? Is he judicious enough? No, sometimes not. I agree with that. He over-dribbles, stuff like that, but the skills are absurd. How is it that this dude makes teams worse? Explain that one to me. Because until LeBron freaking James showed up in Cleveland, that was a losing situation. And Kyrie, deployed as kind of a weapon by LeBron James, was very useful. Kyrie went to Boston. The team was better without him than with him. They were better in the regular season. They were better in the playoffs without Kyrie. Look it up. He goes to Brooklyn. Same thing. When Kyrie's been hurt, the team's functioned better. This shouldn't be possible. And it's so before you even get to the off-the-court stuff, and maybe they're related, right? The personal reasons to why the team doesn't function as well. He does not seem to be good for the way a team functions on the floor, and maybe that's related to how it is in the locker room. Does not seem to be good. I ain't rooting against him. I thought it was reckless and irresponsible when he questioned whether the earth is round, not to mention idiotic. But okay. Kyrie, I think, is the most entertaining basketball player in the world. I think he's worth the price of admission. But that's separate from saying he's a winning player. And already the Nets are not functioning the way they ought to. Is Kyrie going to undo this team's fortunes? 888-SAY-ESPN. You're going to weigh in on this, New York. 888-SAY-ESPN. And that was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Bama bludgeons the Buckeyes, and Saban with his seventh national championship.
Last year they said the dynasty was over. We don't stop, we just keep reloading.
We came and dominated.
Paul Feinbaum joins me now on the Goodyear Hotline. Paul.
Hey, Max, what's going on?
What's going on? Before you and I start arguing about your wrong-headed take on Devontae to the Jets, let me get into this championship game. Paul, it seems to me, and I've heard you talking on TV all day, this is Alabama's sixth title in 12 years. In 12 years, Paul. Last year I thought, okay, if Dabo hasn't overtaken Saban, the Nick Saban era is over, in the sense that it's not like Nick Saban, you know, is 1 through 10, and then at 11 we can start talking about other guys. Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, Alabama, Clemson, neck and neck. No, they're not. Just like that, Nick Saban reestablishes it. Is he the greatest, let's start with this, college football coach of all time?
Yes, he is. And Max, I feel like I have a little bit of perspective on that question because I began my career covering Bear Bryant. I covered his last couple of years, so I was able to watch his end and see what everyone said about him that knew him far better than I did. I mean, I was a young kid, cup reporter. He was the greatest coach of all time when I wrote those words in a newspaper article the day he retired. And it just didn't seem like he would ever anything would ever rival that again. And Saban got off to a fast start. His third year, he won a title. His fifth year, his sixth year, he almost won one the next. Had that famous kick six game, and then he won. He then started winning them again. And then it looked like Urban Meyer was ascending, Dabo Sweeney was ascending, and you had to think it was started. The window was starting to close. It looked like it, and then the pandemic came, and while some of the coaches were home, trying to decide what their kids should watch on Netflix, Nick Saban was at his office. He never left. He figured out ways to get his players. He made sure they all had Apple Watches so his trainer could keep up with their workout back at home. I mean, these sound like minor things, but he was ahead of everyone else, especially a school like Ohio State that shut down in August, came back in October, and never really quite materialized.
Yeah, Nick Saban's the type where, coach, there's a zombie apocalypse outside. What do you think should happen? Well, I don't know anything about a zombie apocalypse. I do know we have to prepare for, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. 7 national titles. He passes Bear Bryant. 6 at Alabama. In 14 seasons, in the last 12, 6 also. It's just remarkable what's gone on. I want to get into some, like, off the Saban topic, but related to the game. Devontae Smith had a great game, and he is a great player. And, Paul, if the Jets are convinced Sam Darnold is the guy, absolutely go get, you know, some help for Sam Darnold. Even then, I don't know about Devontae Smith. But, Paul, I don't know that Sam Darnold's the guy. I'm not ruling it out, but I wouldn't bet on it. And even if you don't like Justin Fields, you know, you have a lot to do on the Jets. Offensive linemen, 2 or 3 of them. Several linebackers, right before you even get to wideouts. Paul, Calvin Johnson went 2nd overall, played in 2 playoff games, and lived up to his potential, it seemed. Only 2 playoff games. You can get great receivers in the second round, in the 5th round. You know, Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill, both 5th rounders. You could argue either one of those guys the best in the game right now. If Devontae Smith is there, I get the Dolphins drafting him because they have a lot of stuff in place. They have a high draft pick because of draft capital they've accumulated, not because they stink. If Devontae Smith is there, do you believe the Jets should take him?
I walked into a brawl a couple hours ago on First Take, so I'm going to be more cautious because I'm still taking the glass out of my eyes, Max, from the debate between you and yes. And Stephen A. And I really didn't even care. I was like, what did I walk into here?
That's right.
I think they should consider it. I'm not absolute like he is. Okay, I think you have to evaluate everything around you. But I will tell you this. I've been on an Alabama program a long time.
Paul, you sounded underwater for a second. Could you repeat that last sentence?
That I've been around. Which one? Which part of that?
Just the last thing you said. You just went out a little bit.
Oh yeah, I've been around the Alabama program. I'm sorry, I've been around the Alabama program a long time and have watched Julio Jones and Amari Cooper and Ridley and Ruggs and all these Judy, all these great receivers. And I never expected him to be the best. And I say that because, Max, on September 26th, when Alabama's season began, he wasn't the best receiver on that team. That was Jalen Waddle. But he emerged into this monster, and I've never seen anything quite like it. I'm maybe a prisoner of the moment right now, but the draft isn't right now, thank goodness. But, yeah, I would seriously consider it. I think he does have that type of impact.
Meantime, part of that, it's a loaded question because part of that has to do with what you think of Justin Fields, right? Like, if the Jets think they need a quarterback, because Trevor Lawrence is going first, obviously, can they justify taking Justin Fields 2nd overall? What's curious to me, Paul, is Justin Fields is playing with a hit pointer, right? Didn't look great yesterday, but okay. Had a couple of down games, a couple of moments where his kind of internal clock didn't look great, dealing with the blitz and different things. But, Paul, how short people's memories are. Just last week, he threw 6 touchdown passes against Clemson. He's a big, strong kid. He has a big, strong arm. He's an accurate passer. And he can move. What am I missing? Why has his stock fallen so hard?
You're not missing anything, but yeah, I'm not big on the draft analysts. See, these are the same guys that whiffed on Dak Prescott badly. They do it all the time, and I've always liked Justin Fields. I mean, people listening aren't you know that into college football like my audience. Think about this: 3 years ago, this guy couldn't beat out Jake Fromm at the University of Georgia. Okay.
Fromm was pretty good.
Well, you know, he is, but come on. Nobody was talking about Jake Fromm to be the 2nd pick in the draft either. But, yeah, I think he's got a lot of upside. And I think with the right team, he can be dynamite. The reason why his stock went down this year, because he got caught. His team was, they couldn't get, you know, some teams could outrun COVID. His team was always having trouble with it.
Right.
He didn't have his compliments. And this Ohio State team was nowhere near as good as last year's Ohio State team. They just happened to play the game of their lives against Clemson. That's how they found themselves against Alabama.
Paul, is this Alabama team the greatest college football team of all time?
I think it is. And, you know, it's an easy thing to say. The one thing I don't like about this team is, you know, their defense is good by Alabama standards. But when I talk about Alabama standards, I mean, they had a defense 4 years ago that just littered the first round of the NFL draft. And it's one of the best I've ever seen. And, you know, sometimes, and by the way, it didn't even win the championship. So they lost to Deshaun Watson on the final play of the CFP. So I think, but offensively,
on a miracle play, by the way, like on a miracle play, Paul.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. But I mean, they gave out these awards the other night, and I'm not a big awards guy. I'm sure you don't watch these shows either. But on one offense, they gave out the Remington to the best center, Landon Dickerson, best running back, Najee Harris, best quarterback, Mac Jones, best wide receiver, Devontae Smith. Even Pete Carroll's teams, and you were out there, I think, at the time. They had, you know, three great players,
yep,
but not that many.
Paul, this Alabama team was the best wire to wire. They stomped through the competition. A lot of SEC games, like a lot of wins there, as Nick Saban points out. And then won the whole thing the way they did. You got a case. They really have a case. You made a point earlier today on, I want to say it was Get Up. Maybe it was Sports Center. Maybe it was Get Up. This morning I was watching you, and you talked about Saban versus Bear Bryant and how championships were awarded back in the day and why Saban's accomplishments really stand out. Can you repeat that story if you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Think about this, Max. 1973, I think that if I remember First Take correctly, that it was a mirage. I felt like I was going through a car wash without a car. Alabama and Notre Dame played for the national championship in the Sugar Bowl. One of the wire services, I think it was the UPI, gave Alabama the national championship after the regular season. They lost to Notre Dame, but they still claimed a national championship for Bryant. So it was so subjective back then. You had two wire service polls. Sometimes they would split. There was no conference championship game. Bear Bryant was able to pick his opponent in the bowl game. Sometimes he picked a good opponent like Notre Dame. Sometimes he picked a bum so he could beat them. He had that much control versus what we have now. You have to get to a conference championship game, and then you have to win two games in the playoffs. And whether we debate, you know, the fifth team versus the fourth team, you better be good if you win both games.
That's exactly right. And Nick Saban, to me, there's no argument for anyone anymore. The only argument is he the greatest coach in the history of American team sports? Not whether or not he's the greatest coach in the history of college football.
And one more thing, Max, Bear Bryant also coached in an era. He did not take his first African-American player until the 70s. So, I mean, and that's another thing that that does concern some people about when you're ranking him as the greatest coach of all time.
Absolutely. And the comments he made before he started taking African-American players were telling about his point of view also. The great Paul Feinbaum, ladies and gentlemen. Paul, always a pleasure to have you on. I always appreciate it when you do come on. I'll talk to you this week at some point, I'm sure, on First Take.
I hope so. Hey, Max, enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. So much fun.
Thanks, brother. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. A lot of calls to get to in New York and about the Brooklyn Nets. Remember when Knicks fans, by the way, thought, oh, you're going to be talking about us? Yeah, shut up. No, we're not. Oh, the Knicks are great. Oh, they're heading in the right direction, but there was no other direction to head. You finally hit bottom. Meantime, is Kyrie going to be such a big problem in Brooklyn that he's going to undo this Nets team, their championship aspirations? 888-SAY-ESPN. By the way, Paul Feinbaum, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And by the way, coming up in a little bit, did Wentz force the Eagles to choose between him and Peterson? Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
the podcast.
Doug Peterson has been fired as the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
When it looks like you're not competing at the end of the season, when it seems that you've given up on your team, I just think a total failure by this team.
Is he now sort of the sacrificial lamb for a front office telling him to play that way in the final game?
I mean, they chose coach over quarterback, getting rid of him first and then figuring out the quarterback position and what to do from there.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN. Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Let me be clear about Doug Peterson, okay? He had to go. But it's still surprising, as this is the fastest any Super Bowl winning coach has ever been fired after that Super Bowl win. And he pushed every right button in 2017. And had one of the best years a coach will ever have. And I've discussed it a lot. It's been rocky with Wentz ever since, sub 500. Look, Foles rescued them in 2018. And by the way, one drop pass from Alshon Jeffrey, and they get to the NFC Championship game. But then the wheels really came off. Prior to last season, Peterson, yes, he led the Eagles to three straight playoff appearances, but let's be clear, the only reason the Eagles made the playoffs in 2019 was the fact that they played in the worst division we'd ever seen until this year's NFC East. And look, Peterson had player development failings. Nelson Agholor, Sidney Jones, they're both cut this season, right? They proved to be valuable with the Raiders and the Jags. Someone's developing them. But the clarity we now have on the Peterson in dynamic in Philly is startling, because despite the Super Bowl pedigree, he was an order taker from both Lurie, the owner, and Roseman, the GM. And that's really ultimately Peterson's undoing. Peterson failed to either understand or to properly utilize his Super Bowl pedigree and stand up to his franchise quarterback for starters, right? Wentz's enablers in the ownership suite and front office were also guys Peterson had to stand up to. And the time to do that, though, is after the playoff loss to the Saints, where he made lemonade out of lemons. Or at the latest, following the loss to the Seahawks, you had a 40-year-old McCown in that game, right? Having the owner and GM tell a Super Bowl-winning coach what coaches should be on his staff, the fact that he's instructed to stick with Wentz and follows that until it's too late, and by the way, I'm hearing he actually wanted to still fix Wentz. Ultimately, he had to tank the final game of the season. Peterson is a very good coach. He's not a very good coach for this situation, okay? Jeffrey Lurie is interesting, the Eagles owner. Listen to what he had to say at the press conference announcing Peterson's firing.
It's not based on quarterback or a particular position group. Certainly, you have to look at the regression of our offense. You know, this is a league that scored the most points ever in 2020. We were obviously, I think, 31st in offense. But if you want to be a dominant team, you need to be a top offensive unit. But it's multiple variable. I don't want you to think there's, you know, one possible explanation for a change in head coach. It's way far more complex than that.
Jeffrey Lurie used to be considered one of the best owners in sports, but these actions are indefensible. Peterson is a close call. I get it. I've argued that he has to go, and I'm staying with that. But that's a close call. But wait a second. You're going to fire Peterson and not Howie Roseman? How could you possibly hold a Super Bowl-winning coach to such a high standard, but the GM gets a complete pass? Let's be clear about this. Roseman may be, in fact, the worst talent evaluator of all the GMs in football. He took Arcega Whiteside 7 picks before Metcalf. He selected Jalen Reagor 1 pick before Justin Jefferson. Don't forget the impossibly terrible, 2014 first-round pick, Marcus Smith. That pick was so bad. Remember, they gave personnel control to Chip Kelly back then after that. But it's beyond his inability to draft players. The salary cap situation's an unmitigated disaster. It's worse than his draft history. They also do things like they make medical staff changes year in and year out, and yet they have more injuries than any team in the league. So what does Lurie do well as an owner at this point, other than overly empower a franchise quarterback? I mean, by the way, I'm happy about the fact that Roseman's still the GM. I'm a Giants fan. All right, look, there's a lot of stuff to get into today, including off that championship Alabama performance. Devontae Smith, Jets fans, you want him? Second overall? You believe in your guy, Sam Darnold? I don't think it's impossible that Sam Darnold might wind up being a good quarterback. I wouldn't stake my franchise on it at this point, though. And I think Justin Fields is going to be very good. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. He's an athlete. He has a big, strong arm. He is an accurate passer. And he's mobile and knows how to use those attributes. Now, he's bad against the blitz, and he doesn't have great clock, internal kind of clock stuff, right? People talk about, you know, quarterback awareness, which, by the way, used to be code words for keeping black guys from quarterbacking, right? But, okay, I could see that in Justin Fields. He's had some uneven performances. Yeah, because he's young. You know, well, he doesn't like pressure. If you can get the blitz, yeah, if you can blitz him, it's like in boxing. He doesn't like it to the body. Go to the body. No one likes it to the body. Tom Brady doesn't like pressure either. We have such short memories. Did Justin Fields look great yesterday? No. But guys, Jets fans, he had a hip pointer issue. What about the week before? Are memories that short? He threw 6 touchdown passes against Clemson. 6. He accounted for over 400 yards of offense by himself. You don't want Justin Fields? Fine, Jets fans. You still want Devontae Smith? Calvin Johnson went 2nd overall, fulfilled his potential. Went to 2 playoff games. Because teams bad enough to be selecting 2nd overall need a lot more than a wide receiver. You need multiple offensive linemen, multiple linebackers. You need so much if you're the Jets, and probably a quarterback. The Dolphins, who are selecting 3rd overall because they have draft capital, not because they stink, take Devontae Smith. The Jets, though? Jets fans, you sure you want to do that? Richard in Manhattan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, if Mike Tomlin had his home crowd at that game on 4th down and 1, do you think he would have still punted and the fans were going wild and they had just scored twice before? Do you think in that same situation with a capacity Pittsburgh crowd, do you think he still would have punted?
He shouldn't have punted.
I understand. But do you think he would have been more influenced with the crowd screaming?
I don't know.
Behind him?
I don't think Tomlin gives into that kind of thing, actually. Why do you ask?
Well, I thought it was a terrible call. He did that, if you remember, when he was 11-0 against Washington toward the end of the half. They were up either 10-0 or 14-0 on Washington. They were 11-0. It was a Monday night game, and it was 4th and inches. Pittsburgh had the ball. He could have put his foot on Washington's throat by getting a first down.
Hold on. So, Richard, what you're saying is he's done this before. So
he did it before when they were 11-0. And
right, so what's the crowd have to do with it?
They went all downhill.
Okay, look, I agree. I'm not talking Tomlin right now, but I agree with that. He shouldn't have punted. David in New York. David in New York, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Thanks, Max. Thanks a lot. Look, I just want to put this out there about Kyrie Irving, okay? I think they're getting exactly what they paid for. They should have seen the writing on the wall. When a guy starts off, when you got guys like Steve Nash and you have a great coaching staff, and you come out and you say, we don't need any coach. When you take shots at LeBron, even though you hit the big shot in Cleveland, let's face it, Cleveland goes nowhere without LeBron. 2 things. I think they're getting what they paid for because they have a soft coaching staff. They should have put someone in there like a Riley type of a coach, a more stern coach. And secondly, the last blockbuster deals that went down that were successful, they had LeBron James attached to them.
Let's not forget, the reason Kyrie is in Brooklyn is because KD is in Brooklyn. They came as a package deal to Brooklyn, right? That's why, and you ask me, would I do the deal? Hell yeah, I get KD also? Of course, you have to, because you don't win without superstars in the NBA. You do not win without superstars in the NBA, and KD is as super a star as they come. Kyrie is an all-star, but his deleterious effect on team chemistry, at least on team results, makes him less than a superstar. And when you combine that with Dinwiddie being hurt, and now Kyrie also taking multiple games off for personal reasons, first let me say I hope he's okay. I hope his family's okay. But when you start hearing about games off for personal reasons, and then you violate protocol, and you're going to have more games off where you're not available to the team, and even before then the team is underperforming, and this is not the first time you've joined a team where even though you may be the most skilled player ever, the team underperforms and does better with you off of the team, you have to have questions about Kyrie Irving. What is going on with this guy? 888-SAY-ESPN, you guys want to talk Kyrie today. Devontae Smith, Jets fans, and by the way, L.A. Rams. The L.A. Rams. I mean, that's that defense. You have a Packers team with Aaron Rodgers that seems to be peaking, but that's about as bad a draw as you can get if you're Aaron Rodgers. We're going to get into that game in a little while. 888-SAY-ESPN. Axe Max is next.
Max, the podcast. Axe Max.
Yeah, we're going to get into the Rams in a minute, but right now we're talking the Jets. What do you do with the number two pick? Devontae Smith, Justin Fields, trade down, get someone else? And is Kyrie an unsolvable problem, not for other teams, but for the Brooklyn Nets? Mitch in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Go.
Max, I think the Jets should take Justin Fields. They have another first-round pick. I like that running back from Alabama, and it's plenty of wide receivers they can pick from also. 34, they can go for Amon Ross, St. Brown. What do you
no
think?
No doubt about it. That's exactly right. And by the way, if you believe Sam Darnold's a franchise quarterback, then you don't take him. His development may be too screwed up at this point. And I was never convinced he was going to be great in the first place. Justin Fields. And by the way, if you don't want to go Justin Fields, if you do believe in Sam Darnold, then you need stuff that's not a wide receiver. Great wide receivers can be found. Do you know Tyreek Hill taken in the fifth round? Stephon Diggs taken in the fifth round? Either one could make an argument they're the best in the game right now. Fifth round. You know who doesn't go? Like sometimes you can get a TJ Watt in, you know, late in the first round, but those great pass rushers, those shutdown corners, high draft picks. You don't use it on a receiver. Look, I was talking about this on the air today. I love the fact that I get to root for Saquon Barkley as a New York Football Giants fan, but you shouldn't have taken him second overall. Super Bowl winning teams never do that with running backs. Andre in Massachusetts, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Go.
Max, thanks for taking my call. Listen, Kyrie is an unconventional dude. He's been that way for his entire career. But listen, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. He's been unsolvable for his entire career. So what makes anybody think that the Brooklyn Nets are going to have the mystery code?
Right. Well, I'll tell you why, Andre. Because with LeBron James, when Kyrie was clearly second banana, it worked. So I think the thought was, it's the only way for us to get Kevin Durant thought the Brooklyn Nets, and they were right. So we got to take Kyrie Irving, and maybe as clear second banana, it works. I understand that thinking. Tony in Los Angeles, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, how's it going? I just want to know, you know, day 95, 96 without the Yankees, without DJ LeMahieu, we're 5 weeks away from spring training. Francisco Lindor is talking about painting New York in orange and blue. What are your thoughts of that, and how long do you think we're going to hold out or wait this method of DeLay here?
Hal Steinbrenner's playing New York cheap, period. I understand the desire to get under the luxury tax so you're not a repeat offender. You got to get that down eventually. But the fact of the matter is DJ LeMahieu has been your best player the last couple of years, and the Yankees have had a stacked team. DJ LeMahieu's been the best player. He plays great defense at second base. He can play multiple positions. He can really hit, and he hits with power nowadays. He's a great player in his prime, and no excuses from the Yankees. Sign him. Shut up and sign him. Aaron in Dallas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. You have 30 seconds.
Hey, Max, appreciate your perspective, man. I want to get back to that Kyrie point. You know, he has all the skill and talent in the world, but everyone knows in that position it takes leadership. Do you think he'll ever find that to find a championship, or is he always going to play second fiddle?
No, he does not have the leadership abilities, it seems to me, to lead a team to a championship. He is an outstanding offensive weapon to be deployed by a player better than him on his own team, like LeBron James. It's hard to find players better than Kyrie, but the Nets have one in KD. I'm not writing them off. It could still work, but you have to be alarmed at Kyrie right now. Is Nick Saban the GOAT of team sports? Rams going to be a problem for the Packers?